Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about Vale. Vale is a Brazilian multinational company engaged in metals and mining. It is also the largest logistics operator in Brazil. In this video, we will be looking at the company's business, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review Vale.
Hey guys, I'm on the SEC.gov website looking at the Form 20-F, which is the annual report that Vale filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2021. Let's start off by getting a business overview. The company states that it is one of the largest metals and mining companies in the world based on market capitalization. It is also one of the largest producers of iron ore and nickel. It produces iron ore pellets, copper, platinum group metals, PGMs, gold, silver, and cobalt. The company is presently engaged in greenfield mineral exploration in 5 countries, and it operates large logistics systems in Brazil and other regions in the world, including railroads, maritime terminals, and ports, which are integrated with its mining operations. Vale points out that it also has distribution centers to support the delivery of iron ore worldwide. Now let's look at the operational summary of the business. For the fiscal year 2021, the total net operating revenue from continuing operations amounted to about $54.5 billion. Out of which the ferrous metals segment amounted to about $46.3 billion. The base metals brought in about $7.9 billion, and others brought in about $234 million. So we can see that for the fiscal year 2021, 85% of the company's total net operating revenue came from its ferrous metals segment. Similarly, for the past 2 years, we can see that more than 80% of the company's revenue came from its ferrous metals segment. Now let's go back to the table of contents to get a better understanding of the company's results of operations. For the fiscal year 2021, we just looked at the net operating revenue number of $54.5 billion. Once the company subtracts all the costs and expenses associated with running its operations, its operating income amounted to about $27.69 billion. When we compare Vale's 2021 operating income to that of the year 2020, we can see that the company saw more than 100% growth in its operating income. This is due to the fact that the company's net operating revenue saw a growth driven by the fact that the commodity prices in the year 2021 were much higher than the year 2020. Additionally, some of the expenses such as the decharacterization of dams and impairment losses were lower in the year 2021 as compared to the year 2020. Now let's look at the revenue breakdown based on the geography. For the fiscal year 2021, the North American segment brought in about 3.5% of the company's revenue. The South and Central American segment brought in about 11.2% of the company's revenue. Asia brought in about 69% of the company's total revenue. And Europe brought in about 12.3% of the company's total revenue. The revenue breakdown in the year 2021 is comparable to that seen in the year 2020. There was a slight uptick in the sales in the North American segment and a slight downtick in the Asian segment. Now let's look at the prices charged to customers in the year 2021 and how they compared to the year 2020. We can see that for the fiscal year 2021, the prices charged for ferrous minerals as well as base metals were a lot higher than that seen in the previous year. Under the ferrous minerals segment, the iron ore saw the lowest growth, which was at 30.8%, and the highest was ferrous alloys, which grew at about 71.5%. For the base metals, gold saw the lowest growth in prices of about 4.8%, whereas copper saw the highest growth in prices of about 59.2%. So the growth in these commodity prices is one of the reasons why Vale's top line number grew. When it comes to the cost of goods sold, these are the costs that are directly associated with the production and manufacturing of the company's products. We can see that Vale's cost of goods sold are not growing at the same pace as the commodity prices are. This is one of the reasons why the company is able to grow its net income numbers year over year. Now that we have a brief understanding of Vale's business, its ferrous mineral and base metal segment, and the revenue breakdown, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at Vale. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue was about $48.8 billion. For the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2021, it was about $54.5 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, it was about $52.8 billion. Over the past 10 years, we can clearly see the cyclicality in this commodity-like mining business as the company's revenue dropped down to a low of about $25.6 billion in 2015. And ever since then, the company's revenue has slowly been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about $17 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $28.6 billion. The company's operating income has a similar trend as the company's revenue. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about $5.5 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $21.4 billion. Over the past 10 years, there were 2 years when the company reported a loss, that is back in 2015 and 2019. However, apart from those years, the company has been profitable. Next is the dividends per share. Back in 2012, the company paid out about 87 cents per share as dividend. And for the trailing 12 months, that number had grown to about $2.67 per share as dividend. Over the past 10 years, Vale has paid out dividends every year except in 2016. Next is the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had 5,106 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, that number had decreased to 4,932 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number grew to a high of about 5,197 million shares back in 2017. However, ever since then, the company's shares outstanding number has been trending downwards. This is good news as it tells us that the company has been buying back its shares. And when a company buys back its shares, it actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next is the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. So essentially, the book value is the same thing as shareholders' equity. Back in 2012, the company's book value per share was about $11.16 per share. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was $7.94 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was $818 million. For the year 2021, it was $20.6 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was $16 billion. We know that 2021 was a unique year for Vale due to the spike in commodity prices, which resulted in higher growth in the company's revenue, which is why we would be using the 2020 free cash flow number of $9,892 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Said differently, we would be getting a more realistic version of Vale's intrinsic value if we built our discounted model around the free cash flow from 2020. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was 11.3%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was 40.48%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $40.48 left as pure profit. Ideally, we wanted the company's net margin numbers to be positive, staying steady or increasing. We do see that the company's net margin for the year 2015 and 2019 were negative. This is because the company's net income in those calendar years were negative, which is common for a commodity-like mining company like Vale. Next is the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2012, the company's return on equity was 9.3%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 57.7%. Over the past 10 years, there were 2 years when the company reported negative return on equity numbers, which was because the company's income in those calendar years were negative. The three ways that the company can report high return on equity numbers is first, when the company becomes more leveraged, that is when it takes on more debt. Second is when the company buys back its shares. And third, when the company's income numbers grow. Next is return on invested capital. This number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2012, the company's return on invested capital was about 7.81%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was 39.23%. Vale's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 10.5%. And since the company's return on invested capital is greater than the company's weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's interest coverage was 3.25 times. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was 41.24 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of Vale Investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. A current ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company has enough current assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was about 1.82, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.32. Over the past 10 years, the company's current ratio has always been greater than 1.0. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 1.23, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.98. Next is the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 2.0 would tell us that half of the company's assets are financed via liabilities, and half of them are financed via shareholders' equity. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 2.29, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.48. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage grew to a high of about 8.43 back in 2015. However, ever since then, the company's financial leverage has tapered off and has stayed fairly consistent over the past couple of years. Finally, looking at the debt to equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want the company's debt to equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt to equity was at 0.49, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.46. The company's debt to equity ratio has a similar trend as the company's financial leverage. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sale to the date actually receives cash for that service rendered. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company's management is being aggressive with its accounting as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was about 57.27 days, and for the latest quarter, it's at 22.96 days. We can see that over the past 10 years, the company's day sales outstanding number has slowly been trending downwards. Next is the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2012, the company's day's inventory was at 68 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 77 days. Ideally, we want the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a growing day's inventory number because that tells us that the company's inventory is just lingering around on its balance sheet. We'd rather see that inventory be pushed onto the company's income statement and eventually realized as a profit. Finally, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company's payables period was about 62 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 54 days. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing, as it tells us that the company's management is trying to hold on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers. So based on the company's day sales outstanding number as well as the payables period, we can see that the company's management is not playing any accounting tricks in order to fool the investors. Now let's look at Valet's valuation. First item on the list is the price to earnings ratio. The company's PE is at 3.3. The company's price to book is at 1.9. The company has a price to sales of 1.4. The company has a price to cash flow of 3.6. And it has a dividend yield of 14.5%. When we compare Valet's current valuation to its 5-year average, we can see that on all the valuation metrics, the company is currently undervalued. And if we compare Valet to the S&P 500, an S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. And we can think about the S&P 500 as our opportunity cost. If we compare Valet's current valuations to the S&P 500, we can see that Valet is undervalued compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at Valet's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted the company's 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was $9,892 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 5%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 13%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 13% annual return. I usually use a 10% discount rate, but I'm adding another 3% margin of safety on top of that 10% because Brazil is an international investment and comes with its own risk. I expect the company's long-term free cash flow to grow at 2.989%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect Vale's free cash flow to grow at 2.989%. This number is in line with the 30-year U.S. Treasury yield. The company has 4,932 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $14,569 million. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $20 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $15.42 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 23% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $67.5 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark in perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $113 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $20 per share. If we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Vale is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $11 per share. And if we disregard the debt, in other words, if we think that Vale is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for us to worry about the company paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $23 per share. Finally, let's try to figure out what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment if we were to invest in the security at the current stock price. And for that, I will run a goal seek analysis where I will set myself to the intrinsic value. My two value is going to be the current stock price, which is about $14.42 per share. And I will run this analysis by changing the company's discount rate. So what I get is if I were to invest in the security at the current stock price of $15.42 per share, then I can expect to get an annual return of about 15% on this investment. Overall, Vale has good fundamentals. The company is undervalued not only from a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis standpoint, but also when we looked at the company's current valuations, we saw that the company is currently undervalued compared to its five-year averages. Over the past few years, Vale has had tragic events at its dams and mines, which has led to pre-tax charges of $2.3 billion in 2021, $5.3 billion in 2020, and $7.4 billion in 2019. These charges are to satisfy its obligations, which include dismantling of its upstream dams, indemnification and donations to those affected by the event, and remediation of affected areas. Additionally, when it comes to these charges, Vale's future remains uncertain because there could be any future liabilities that can come about as Vale is going to be tied up in court for years to come. Vale stock is an ADR. This means that there's currency exposure tied to making an investment in this stock. So if the Brazilian real were to depreciate by 10% against the US dollar, and even though the Vale stock is trading at the same stock price in the Brazilian stock exchange, to the US investor, the Vale stock is going to depreciate by 10%. In other words, if the US dollar strengthens against the Brazilian real, then the Vale stock price would go down. Lastly, it's important to note that Vale operates in Brazil, which is an emerging market known to have scandals and corrupt practices. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Vale interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.